So we're going to jump back into Exodus. We just finished up chapter 1 last week, and we're going to start reading to chapter 2. I don't think, even if it doesn't take us as long as I think it will, we probably won't get into chapter 3 today. But certainly, as we continue to read through here, I want us to keep in mind what the core focus was that really the book of Exodus is about, and it's so much about how God just keeps his promises. When God says, I'm going to make a nation out of you to Abraham, and he promises that this stuff is going to happen, the thing that we have to wrap our minds around is that everything happens in God's own time. The promises that he makes to us and the promises that we read about and know are coming, we also have to read about how they may not come in our lifetime. They may not be things that we see ever to come to pass. And the situations that we're in life, there are things that God is constantly orchestrating. You know, we get hung up sometimes on this discussion about free will versus sometimes use the term predestination, if you will, or, you know, what about how much is God, and I don't want to minimize this, how much is God pulling the strings, right? And how much is it that we're just making our own decisions and God is kind of going? We could argue about that all day long. But the bottom line is that when we look at Scripture, we can see how God is taking each and every little action within Moses' life and leading him towards something that he is called to do. And it really all starts back when he makes promises and before. And so he starts to take these pieces of this puzzle to put them all together in ways that not only accomplish his promises, but foreshadow what he's going to do later on with Jesus Christ. Because we can see both of these things kind of unraveling, or not unraveling, but coming together and unfolding as we read through the book of Exodus. And last week we talked about Pharaoh's, how he was oppressing Israel, and we talked about Israel, you know, being slaves and in bondage, and how he was concerned that the Israel men were going to become a great number over time, and if one of the enemies should attack, they might join up with the enemies, and then he's got something to worry about. So his plan becomes, we're just going to eliminate all of the Israeli men before they have a chance to grow up. So every boy child that is born, he's asked midwives to essentially dispose of. We know that they went back to him saying, well, we couldn't do that because these women, they just have this baby so quick. We weren't able to be there to make that happen. And so later on, he just issues the edict, to all his people that every son that's born to Hebrews, you shall cast them into the Nile and let every daughter live. And so that becomes the standing order as we move into the birth of Moses, an incredibly key figure in working through God's plan. Any comments or questions over last week before we jump into chapter 2 here?
Quick question.
Yeah.
I'm just curious. How many generations are we from Jacob at this point?
Oh.
Joseph. Not Jacob.
Joseph. Let's see. We had talked a little bit about that.
I'm just trying to get the timeline.
Because Exodus starts off with going through a bit of a genealogy here, and talks about these names of the sons of Israel, and then we see all descendants of Jacob were 70 persons, and Joseph was already in Egypt. Then Joseph died, and all his brothers and all that generation. But the people of Israel were fruitful and increased greatly. And let's see, I think we did we make a reference last week? I've forgotten now. To No, that's right. We don't know exactly how long this was, except that there's a reference that to how long the Israelites will be held in bondage, and it was what we say last week,
400 years.
Yeah, so at least from the time that they started to be held in bondage, moving forward, that we think there's about a 400-year period based on what he had told Abraham. But I'm not entirely sure, other than essentially hearing here that all of this has come to pass, and essentially everyone from that generation is gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
It said, I've got a little excerpt of
you got something
of mine that says that the king or pharaoh at this time did not know Joseph.
Yeah.
Did not know who he was. So there had to be at least a generation between for him to not, at least.
Yeah, there had been. Oh, yeah, because actually that's the first verses. And then verse 8 in chapter 1 that essentially says that the new king who has rose over Egypt doesn't know who Joseph is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's right. Yeah, so that there's been a significant amount of time.
Okay.
Significant amount of time. And Pharaoh's concerned, he's worried, so he's put this plan into place for trying to get rid of all the males. But at the same time, again, we know that God's going to keep his promises. So let's start reading in chapter 2 about the birth of Moses. It says, now a man from the house of Levi went and took as his wife a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was a fine child, she hid him 3 months. And there's references to that when she saw that he was a fine child, I think some translations say that she saw that he was good. And part of this is folks trying to pull out of the book of Exodus similarities to the creation story, and understanding that really and truly chapter 1 is a kind of a synopsis of the creation of the Israelites and the beginning of their journey. And so you're going to find some of those connections as we read through here, where all you can say, oh, well, that's interesting, because that was said during the creation story in Genesis. Or that's interesting because it is reminiscent of what we know happened in the life of Christ. But we'll read on from here. It says that she hid him for 3 months. And in verse 3 says, when she could hide him no longer, she took for him a basket made of bulrushes, which is papyrus reeds, and dabbed it with bitumen and pitch. So she's making it so it's leak-proof, basically making a little boat. And she put the child in it and placed it among the reeds by the riverbank. And his sister stood at the distance to know what would be done to him. Now, I find it interesting, the order of how this is put in place, because it mentions that a man from the house of Levi took a Levite woman. The woman conceived and bore a son. Then she is putting the son in the river. Then we find out that there's a sister. It's confusing to me. Where'd she come from? I'm just mentioning it, because we have to put it together as we read through it. So she put the child and placed it among the reeds of the riverbank, and his sister stood at a distance to know what would be done to him. Now the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the river while her young woman walked beside the river. She saw the basket among the reeds and sent her servant woman, and she took it. When she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the baby was crying. She took pity on him and said, this is one of the Hebrew children. Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, shall I go and call you a nurse from the Hebrew women to nurse the child for you? And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, go. So the girl went and called the child's mother. And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you wages. So the woman took the child and nursed him. When she grew older, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses because she said, I drew him out of the water. Let's talk about what God has done here. Because there is no, this string of events, how dangerous was it for the daughter to take this child out of the river? How dangerous was it, or how much nerve must you have had for his sister to approach Pharaoh's daughter and just talk to her? That seems like a bold move. It doesn't seem like something that people would just, back then would just, oh, well, look, there's royalty. I'll go have a chat. Especially at that moment. And then to put it all together, and for the just, wow, what luck. The mother gets back involved again and gets to nurse her own child and gets paid for it. This is such an incredible orchestration of events. And then for the daughter to take the child in, and for her to take him as her own son, and Pharaoh's not, we don't know what's going on here. Why wouldn't Pharaoh have a absolute fit and go, wait a minute, that's one of those kids I told everybody to throw in the river? There's so many questions I have about the entire event unfolding, and yet all that we can do is say, God's just got it. It's all in his hands, and he's working through it.
Technically, the child was thrown in the river.
You are correct. Technically, the child was thrown in the river. That's like throwing somebody overboard and throwing them a life preserver. But yeah, you're not wrong. Yeah, you're not wrong.
I'm used to that.
Huh?
I'm used to that.
Yeah, I'm not. From you, anyway. No, you're right, Scott, because if you really want to boil it down, it's like, well, he did what you said.
The semantics of it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, they did what you said.
His daughter could argue that with him. Hey, you know, found him in the water. Technically said, throw him in the river. You did. They did.
Is there any significance about having him hiding him for 3 months, and then when she could hide him no longer? Is he getting too noisy? Is he getting too big? Is he getting? I mean, after 3 months, you can still hide a child under a blanket.
It's not like they're mobile at 3 months.
So. No, I know. No, so I don't.
They're not quiet, though.
Well, you know what?
Yeah, that could be, yeah.
Maybe they were starting to get close. You know, maybe they're checking more thoroughly and coming into the houses and saying, you got any kids in here? You know, I don't know.
Is there any, this is morbid, but is there any reason that someone would be more inclined to kill a newborn versus a 3 month old? I don't know.
Well,
that's an interesting thought. Yeah, I don't know.
I don't know, you know, it's like, okay, we were, this is, I don't know.
No, I don't know either. I like to pose the questions because I want to think about the text, and I mean, I don't want to go too far outside the text, obviously, but I do like to think about the situation and how it must have been unfolding, and what I usually do when I think about those things is become more in awe of what God has done, because we know what Pharaoh wanted done, we know why he wanted it done. And in order to preserve the life of Moses, chances are the only person that Moses would, or excuse me, that Pharaoh would listen to is his daughter. Mm-hmm. You know, if any other woman were to come to him and say, no, please, please don't kill this child, he's not likely to give in. But if his daughter comes to him, the daughter's going to, he's going to have a softer spot. May not be a soft spot, but a softer spot for his daughter. And that was probably the only way that you could guarantee that Moses was actually going to survive as a child and be able to move on to do the things that God is calling him to do.
I'm not trying to be in the Charlton Heston Ten Commandments here. But did Pharaoh know he was Hebrew?
No indication of that. Yeah.
That's okay. What I was wondering, was he so wrapped up in his own doing that he didn't even know what was going on?
Yeah, there's no indication here. But okay. One thing's for sure, his daughter knew.
Right.
She knew.
I would assume Pharaoh, though, would know, okay, I know my daughter and I know she wasn't pregnant. Where'd the kid come from? But
yeah,
I guess they just never bridged that.
And he has a daughter, so he knows where they come from.
Right. Yeah. Yes.
One.
We are connecting the dots here.
But you're right. There's no indication that he knew. But I find it interesting that the daughter could look at the child and know. Was there a, you know, anything about the appearance of Moses that told you his ethnicity? I don't really know. I don't know exactly how that worked out. But for her to say, oh, hey, this is one of those Hebrew kids. There's something here.
So just put two and two together, random baby in the river.
In the river.
I think in the movie you were talking about, Jamie, yeah. I think it was because of the
blanket.
The blanket.
Or, yeah, the swaddling or whatever was, you know. Mm-hmm.
Or maybe they're just really good at building tiny boats.
This quality boat.
Yeah.
This is good pitch.
Yeah.
There is no
guarantee. Yes.
Yes. I might even be a little Viking at this one.
Now, this was shaped like a pyramid.
I was thinking that. It's a pyramid alley.
I don't know why our boats never sail good.
Yeah. So yeah, I think we've exhausted that discussion.
Is that where you imagine that going?
Not at all. I will tell you, I don't come in with any preconceived notions. In fact, I usually don't come in with any pre-thought out questions. Most of the time, it's just the material. It's kind of like bouncing around. And then I look out at you guys and go, what am I going to say next? And then something just happens to be worded out, whether it makes sense or not. Kind of like the responses.
You're welcome.
He just wakes up on Sundays. Let's see how the day goes. Pretty
much. I was like, do I want to face them or not?
I have tried taking notes. I've tried, you know, writing down questions. I've tried going to curriculums, and every time I come in here, I go.
That's why they record it. You don't want to believe it otherwise.
All right. So now, here's what happens with Moses as he grows. One day, when Moses was grown up, he went out to his people and looked on their burdens and saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his people. So he is identifying as a Hebrew. He knows that he has come from these people. He's got that knowledge and he makes that identification. It says he looked this way and that, and seeing no one, he struck down the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. That's kind of rude. It says, when he went out the next day, behold, two Hebrews were struggling together, and he said to the man in the wrong, why do you strike your companion? And he answered, who made you a prince and a judge over us? In other words, who made you a ruler and a judge over us? Does this not seem to be setting him up for the words he's going to hear later on as he starts to take the Hebrews out of Egypt and bring them to all the complaining? Who put you in charge anyway? Did you just leave us out here to die? It seems like there's a pattern starting to develop in his life. So who made you a prince and judge over us? Do you mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian? Now, can you imagine at that moment, you've done something you know you probably shouldn't have done, and you tried to hide it. And then right out of the blue, you have someone look at you and basically say, I know what you did.
Yeah, it was right there, like trying to make sure no one's looking.
Exactly, yeah. Wouldn't you? Exactly. But yeah.
By the sounds of it, he seemed like he was reasonably sure that he had
gotten away with it. Yeah. So he probably was like, I'm okay, I think I'm going to be good here. But can you imagine the feeling? It's that moment when the blood just drains out of your face and your stomach does one of those flip-flops, you know? Oh no. If this person knows, everybody's gonna know. So then Moses was afraid and thought, surely this thing is known. When Pharaoh heard of it, he sought to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and stayed in the land of Midian, and he sat down by a well. There's a lot of things that happen by wells, have you noticed? A lot of people find their wives by wells. You know, Jesus has an incredible encounter at the well. You know, there's a lot of things that happen by well. I heard you guys talking about wells earlier, but.
It's just like the office water cooler.
Yeah.
It's like what?
The office water cooler.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. I guess it is. I agreed with you, and I'm like, that wasn't something I probably should have agreed with. But yeah, sure.
Come on, John, you don't agree with me that quick. You know better.
Yeah, I should mull it over just a little. But there are things that do happen at these wells, and there's a reason for Moses sitting down by the well. God's going to use him and use things again here. In verse 16, it says, now the priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came and drew water and filled the troughs to water their father's flock. The shepherds came and drove them away, but Moses stood up and saved them and watered their flock. And when they had come home to their father, Reuel, he said, how is it that you have come home so soon today? And they said, an Egyptian delivered us out of the hand of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. They identified him as an Egyptian.
And why did shepherds attack?
When
shepherds attack, is that not a Dateline thing?
It's not a Dateline thing, but if it were a movie, it would have a sequel.
Menacing Shepherds.
Yes, that's right. Shepherds. Shepherds.
We wonder if it was like a scarcity thing, like they all, you know, could limited be. Resources. Mm-hmm.
No, it really could be.
They were East Side Shepherds.
Yeah.
They don't like West Siders.
Did they attack him exactly today? Like, would stampede the sheep or something?
Well,
they put them sticks.
let's actually look at this text.
Bring it back in.
Shepherds came and drove them away. I don't know if they went in like, or if they were like, hey, y'all get out of here. I don't know.
I like the when shepherds attack.
Yeah. That's what we're going with.
That's why you don't wear the wrong colors at the well.
You don't know when you lost it, but you lost it.
Did you think we were getting through chapter 2?
No, that was the one thing I didn't have planned. Was finishing chapter 2. And I honestly thought it would be early if we did, and we might have some time left over to discuss it, and I don't think I want to.
That plan's out the window.
So the shepherds drove them away. Moses comes to the rescue, and this is the thing that gets me a little bit. Moses is apparently more efficient and faster at taking care of the sheep and all of the daughters together because they got home early.
Not such a nice comment. Let's just go to the next line.
Yes. Why are you home so soon? This Egyptian showed up in a cave. No, he delivered us out of the hands of the shepherds and even drew water for us and watered the flock. So he said to his daughters, where is he? Why have you left the man? So my first thought was, he's going, this guy's a Marian kind.
Why there's twos for him.
Yeah. Why have you left him behind? Call him that he may eat bread. And Moses was content to dwell with the man. And he gave Moses his daughter Zipporah. She gave birth to a son. And he called his name Gershom. And he said, I have been a sojourner in a foreign land. So there's things are building here for Moses to have a life, for him to prepare for the next phase of his life and what God is about to call him to do. Verse 23 is important because it says, during those many days, the king of Egypt died. Now, in the book of Acts, when Stephen is giving his sermon before he is stoned, he references a lot of Moses' early life and the early life of the Israelites. And he references this to be 40 years. So when we read during those many days, Stephen says that was 40 years. He says, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. So it's important to know that Pharaoh had died, because that Pharaoh is no longer after Moses. So this could open the door for Moses' return and for him to be able to do what God is about to call him to do. So it says, their cry for rescue from slavery came up to God, and God heard their groaning, and God remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. So this may have been I don't know if we add the 40 years to the 400 or if that's part of it, but regardless, we still have this incredibly long period of time before God really starts to, at least it seems like from what we're reading, before he really starts to put this all into action.
It always struck me weird the way they talk about God a lot like this in the Old Testament, where it's like he's a forgetful old man. It's like, oh, God remembered.
Right.
Yeah. How does someone create creation and struggle? I don't think we are
to interpret it that way.
Right.
Might be the closest translate they could come to translate.
Yeah.
I mean, when I see that word, I actually tend to think, or those terms like that, I tend to think it's really telling us God never forgot.
Okay.
Yeah. The interpretation for me is more to remind us that God didn't forget.
Well, it's also, I think, you know, when they're in the desert down the road, it makes it sound like God had to actually walk amongst them to hear their betrayal. They make it sound like here's this. We're used to talking about he's omnipotent, or is that the right word?
Omnipotent.
But they make it sound like no, he's with them, and
well,
you know,
I mean,
it's like hush, he's right over there. Don't talk.
Well, think back to Genesis, right? when he. When he says, essentially, who told you you were naked?
Right.
Right? And what have you done?
Yeah.
It's like he's asking these questions to try to understand what has taken place. Yet we know 100% he knows exactly
right. What
is happening. And think about how God deals with us sometimes. Think about it. Yeah. He deals with us in our sin in ways that he causes us to admit to ourselves, I didn't put you to sleep, did I? To ourselves what we have done. And to make that admission and to bring that sin to light. So even though he knows exactly what's going on, he has ways of getting it out of us. Because the Bible's very clear that God knows our heart. And that he knows our thought life, he knows how we feel, he knows exactly what we're thinking, and yet it's necessary for him to treat us like a child. And so I think if you start framing some of these things in that way, understanding that he already knows, it's like you said, how many times have you gone to your children already knowing the answer to the question you're about to pose?
Like when they got the face covered in chocolate. Did you eat the cake?
Exactly. No? Okay.
There's a reference here in Psalm 105 when David starts recounting this part of the Bible, and it says, God remembers his covenant forever. Or he hath remembered his covenant forever. So it's just kind of like pressing the play button again.
Yeah.
Been on pause. Let's go.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And we do need to remind ourselves again, that's the whole point of what we're reading through here, is that God remembers his promises and he keeps those promises. I think about things from the New Testament which we read where Jesus tells us that he's going to prepare a place for us. And you know, I think of the things that we just can pull out of the text that says, oh, this is a promise to us. He will never leave us nor forsake us. You know, there are so many things throughout the text that if we were to stack them up, it should give us so much peace and should bring us to a point where we can say, we really have nothing to fear on earth. Why should we ever have times of anxiety and worry? And you know, and yet we will and we do, and it's going to continue. But when we know how faithful God is, it is us that has a problem with being faithful. You know, we're the ones who constantly have issues with being able to be faithful to him. And he doesn't have the problem being faithful to us. Not at all. And he's building that here. He's going in that direction to say, I remember what I said, and I know what I said, and I like what Crystal said. It's time to, you know, it's time to take things off pause now, and we're going to move forward. And it was, you know, it was apparently necessary for these people to experience generations of being oppressed. It was part of God's plan that they were going to be in this situation for a very long time. And then it's funny because we have our own mindset about how when God should show up, when we think we need him. And yet he always shows up on time. Always. He's never late, regardless of what we may think. And being able to look back, we can see how he used every situation. And I have to say, he even orchestrated it so that certain things would come to pass. And if it weren't for Jesus Christ, I would have a hard time sitting here saying the words that God orchestrated things to come to pass in his way. And I'm not trying to make a case for predestination, but what I am trying to do is to say that it was God who made the decision that his son would be sacrificed. And he worked everything in such a way that it was going to happen that way. Because you could sit down and say, well, it was their choice to follow him. It was Judas's choice to betray him. And you can point to all of the things that have to come from free will. But what you can't do is say that Mary became pregnant with Jesus because of something that man did. That was God. So there are things in this world that I am absolutely convinced that God says, I'm going to accomplish this, and you're going to have to get out of my way, or I'm going to move you. And then we can talk about free will and how he uses it and how he allows things to occur. And by knowing what's going to happen, he uses that. You can go down that rabbit hole all you want to, and I'm good with that. But what I cannot take away from God is, it was his decision that Mary would become pregnant with his son. And we could not have ever made that happen. And so, you know, you ask the question, does God force us to do things? And my immediate answer is no, because he gives us free will, and I believe in that 100%. But then I come back to the question, could God force us to do things if he wanted us to? And the answer has to be yes. I mean, I don't know how you get away from that. But
think like the spy movies where they're watching something go down and they're talking to their spy on the ground, like, you're going to go this way, and then they don't. And you're like, oh, they didn't do it. You need to do blah, blah, blah. And then they catch up later, like, for the same thing to still happen, but it didn't exactly go.
Didn't exactly go the way, yeah. Now, it still gets done. God is going to, okay, so let's add that in here. God is not only going to keep his promises, but God is going to accomplish his purposes, mm-hmm. right? He's going to accomplish his purposes. And through these things where we see God weave this series of events, we're going to see how he calls Moses next week and talk about the burning bush and go into what takes place with approaching Pharaoh, and we'll get into the signs and all of that good stuff as we move through here. But any other comments or questions before we wrap up?
This morning I was listening to and reading about Sennacherib and Hezekiah. And you know, God had sent Sennacherib to attack Jerusalem, and he got there and he was all, you know, it was God's plan, you know, and he got there and he was all haughty about it and and talking smack against God. God said, you know, who do you think you are? You know, I brought you here. So God let him be destroyed, let somebody else come and still do what he was going to do against Israel. But
yeah, we'll see. What was the old Bill Cosby joke? I brought you into this world, I can take you out. Yeah, it's the way, you know, God made us, and he has the right to do whatever he wants to do. And if we get above where we're supposed to be, bad things can happen. Bad things can happen. Anything else?
We did.
Chapter 2.
Got through it. Got through it.
It was his way.
I don't know if it was good. If we learned anything. No, I enjoy it. I appreciate you all very, very much. Yeah. So we'll get into chapter 2 next week and work our way through it and see how we do it. Oh, I'm going to ask somebody close for us. Let's see. Who's trying to hide from me the most? Crystal, would you close for us?
I didn't hide.
No, I know. I was joking.
I will next time. All right.
He had a moment of clarity. Do I really want Scott to speak out loud?
Dear Lord, thank you for this day. Thank you for all the opportunities that you lay before us today. We just pray that you will guide us in each and every one of them. Lord, we just pray that you'll go throughout the rest of this week with us. Bless us in the things that we say and do. We lift up those who are hurting and those who are sick, that you have your hand in their lives and bring healing to them or peace and comfort and whatever it is that they're dealing with. Lord, we just pray for your many blessings in Jesus' name.
Amen. Thank you.